Present. Have all members voted? Does any member desire to change their vote this morning? Secretary, close the roll.
It all shows, all senators present.
If we stand for invocation.
Let us pray. O Lord, once to make a very important decision, your apostles cast lots. In coming days, there will be many decisions, heavy decisions to be made in these halls and chambers, many decisions in a relatively short time, and they won't be decided by drawing lots. Send your guiding light of truth to shine in the minds of our lawmakers here in the Senate, and your gift of right judgment to their hearts, that they may make the best decisions they can. We make our prayer in your name, O Lord our God. Amen.
Without objection, I'd ask that prayer be spread on the journal. Secretary, certify as correctness of the Daily Journal.
I wish to certify as the correctness of the Journal for the 121st Legislative Day and Senate Supplement Number 29.
Senator Ray.
President, I move the Journal for the 121st Legislative Day and Senate Supplement Number 29 be approved as certified.
Without objection, so ordered. There are guests for introduction this morning. Senator Ray.
Well, Mr. President, I have two groups here today. First, I'll take the Gastineau Student Council. And when I call your names, please stand up so we can see who you are. Beth Hagovic, Darren Promarek, Melissa Anderson, Edra Lewis, Sally Hopkins, Terry Cheese, and Daryl Mikesell, the principal. Welcome. I have another group, Mr. President, from the Family Community Leadership Conference. We have Nancy Rowland, Donna Alspa, and Isabel Rogan from Palmer, Marilyn Bach from Anchorage, Lynn Woods from Sutton, Dora Whitcraft from Anchorage, Wanda Wilhite from Willow, Pat Arney from Palmer, and Barbara Eichner from Anchorage. Welcome to the Senate.
We welcome you this morning. You have the floor, Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, from Eagle River, a longtime Alaskan in the surveying field, well-known within the surveying community of Alaska, Bob Merritt.
Are there messages from the governor this morning?
There are no messages from the governor today, Mr. President.
There are messages from the House.
Message of May 17, the House passed the following and transmitted for consideration. House Concurrent Resolution Number 22... by Representatives Bustle, Abood, Barnes, Bettesworth, Cato, Cowdery, Flood, Fitz, Fuller, Furness, Grusendorf, Hurlburt, Locker, Lindauer, Liska, Martin, M.W. Miller, Hessinger, Phillips, Ringstad, Schultz, Tischer, Ewing, Ward, and Hayes, relating to executive appointments of the Governor.
State Affairs Committee.
CS for House Bill Number 210, Finance Amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to payment for purchases by the state and providing for an effective date.
Commerce and Finance.
CS for House Bill Number 281 LNC by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to the payment of wages.
Labor and Commerce, Finance Committee, look at it. I don't believe it has finance ramifications. 281.
CS for House Bill Number 308 LNC by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to insurance.
Labor and Commerce Judiciary.
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 375, Finance Amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to access to certain criminal justice information.
Judiciary Finance.
That was the message from the House today.
Are there other communications?
There are no other communications.
Reports of standing committees this morning.
The Resources Committee submitted a memo regarding Governor's appointments May 16. Pursuant to your instructions and in accordance with AS 39580, the Senate Resources Committee has had under consideration the governor's appointments named on the attached sheet. There were no stated objections to confirmation of the named individuals by committee members. This does not necessarily indicate an intention to vote for or against the individuals named at the time of the joint session on confirmation. Sincerely, Senator Fahrenkamp, Chairman, Senator Ziegler, Vice Chairman, Senators Eliason, Paul Fisher, Vic Fisher, Mulcahy, and Sturgeliski. The appointees were Commissioner Richard A. Neve, Department of Environmental Conservation, Esther Wanneke, Department of Natural Resources. On the Board of Game, Bennett of Juneau, Gay of Anchorage, Johnson of Nome, Shively of Anchorage, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Clarence Chatterton of Anchorage, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Richard Lestowski, Juneau, Bruce Twomley, Anchorage, Guide Licensing and Control Board, Douglas Pope, Juneau, Philip Driver, Anchorage, Charles Weir, Anchorage, Ray McNutt, Sterling. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Bill No. 74, Sexual Abuse of a Minor, and recommends that it be replaced with a committee substitute with a new title, and Senator Josephson, Chairman, and Senator Vic Fisher signed do pass. Senators Moss and Paul Fisher signed no recommendation. SB 74 has a further referral to Judiciary. The State Affairs Committee considered committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution No. 17, HESS, State Medal for Heroism, and recommends do pass, signed Senator Vic Fisher, Chairman, concurring Senators Kelly and Sturgeliski. House Concurrent Resolution No. 17 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The State Affairs Committee considered committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution No. 28, Resources, Processing of Native Allotments, and recommends that it be replaced with a Senate committee substitute and a majority do pass, signed Senator Vic Fisher, Chairman, concurring Senators Kelly and Sturgeliski. House Joint Resolution No. 28 has no further referral.
Rules Committee for placement.
The State Affairs Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill No. 17, Judiciary, amended by the Judiciary Committee, authorizing an advisory vote on the drinking age, raising the drinking age to 21, allowing employment of certain minors in licensed premises, and amending other provisions of law relating to the drinking age. Senator Vic Fisher, Chairman, signed do not pass. Senators Kelly and Sturgeliski signed do pass. They attached a zero fiscal note. 17 has a further referral to Judiciary. The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill No. 257, Standards of Conduct of Legislators and Legislative Employees in Establishing a Legislative Ethics Commission, and recommends that the Judiciary Committee substitute be adopted and calendar on May 18, signed Senator Fakes, Chairman, concurring Senators Ray and Kelly. The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill No. 294, Compensation of State Officers and Employees Not Covered by Collective Bargaining, and recommends that it be calendared on May 18, signed Senator Fakes, Chairman, concurring Senators Ray and Kelly. This also appears on today's calendar. Those are the standing committee reports.
Senator Ray.
Really stand these for a second.
There are no special committee reports.
There's a bill for first reading.
Senate Bill No. 301 by Senator Fahrenkamp, an act establishing a fur bearer management fund and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
That was the only new bill.
Takes us to the data calendar, Senator Ray.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 257 be placed at the bottom of the calendar.
Objection. Secretary Reed, Senate Bill 294 by title.
Senate Bill No. 294 by Senator Sackett, an act relating to the compensation of state officers and employees not covered by collective bargaining, providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered this bill and recommends do pass, signed Senator Sackett, co-chairman, concurring Senators Mulcahy, Josephson, Vic Fisher, and Fakes.
Are there any amendments?
There are no amendments.
The absence of amendments, Senator Ray.
We would ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 294 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objection, so ordered. Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill No. 294, an act relating to the compensation of state officers and employees not covered by collective bargaining and providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 294 is before you for discussion and debate. Senator Sackett has the floor.
No, I was just sitting down.
Are there further people wish the floor? Senator Gilman wishes the floor.
Mr. President, I believe yesterday the chairman of the Finance Committee said that this bill was a companion to the bill that we had before us yesterday. And I had raised a couple of questions on that bill that dealt with the retroactive dates. And I noticed that Section 4 of this bill says that the Act, or Section 1 through 3 of the Act, are retroactive January 1, 1983. However, there were some different dates than that in the bill that we passed yesterday. So my question is, does this apply, this salary schedule apply
To say those dates that were March 1st, 1982, and January 1, I think it was 1982.
Senator Sack, if you wish the floor.
We're talking about two different things. On the units that Senator Gilman referred to yesterday are negotiated union contracts. And this bill covers only members who are not members of collective bargaining units. Every time we've given an increase to unions, we've subsequently given an increase to the non-covered people, both in the legislature, judicial branch, and the administration.
For further debate on the bill, Senator, you have the floor.
Yes, a question, if I might, for a response. This bill covers on page 2, section 2, lines 15 and so on. It covers the permanent and temporary employees of the judicial branch, but it goes on to say that only permanent employees of the legislative branch are covered. So we're in a sense, we're dealing with the permanent staff, but not the temporary staff of the legislature. And I was pleased to receive the copy of the information from the National Conference on State Legislatures that talks about various issues. And one that they did bring up were the salary discrepancies between the House and the staff, as well as session interim and session only staff policies. And I know there have been some actions. Some feel perhaps that the temporary employees are receiving a generous wage, but we'll remember back a couple of years ago in 1981, we had some really serious employee concern, and I think it was justified over the disparities that are available. Some get vacation time, others do not. The temps are working on a 1981 salary schedule. So it gets down to my question, is that issue going to be addressed?
Senator Sackett.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is going to be addressed. There are two problems here. One is the discrepancy between the Senate and the House in terms of the pay that we have for temporary employees. The other discrepancy is within our own body, where some raises have been given by changing the classification or the name of the position. And I've talked to the president and to the rules chairman, and a committee is set up to work on this at this point right now. Once that's resolved, then we'll just be coming in with another supplemental bill. There'll be a number going through here, and we can just attach it to that.
The floor, Senator Sturgeon.
Remove any objection. I really appreciate that attitude. I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and I hate to see us get further and further out. I appreciate your response. Thank you.
Question is called for. There's no further debate. The question is, shall Senate Bill 294 pass the Senate? You may proceed. All members have voted. Does any member wish to change their vote? The Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
Senate Bill 294 has passed the Senate. Senator Ray.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of Senate Bill 294 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, effective date clause has been adopted. Next item on the daily calendar is Senate Bill 215. Secretary Reed, Senate Bill 215.
Senate Bill number 215 by Senators Ray and Curtula, an act authorizing the use of Alaska Permanent Fund income to pay longevity bonuses, amending the longevity bonus program and the Permanent Fund dividend distribution program, providing for an effective date. The Ad Hoc Committee on Residency considered this bill and recommends that it be replaced with a committee substitute. Senator Ray, Chairman, and Senator Curtula signed do pass. Senator Sackett signed no recommendation. The Finance Committee considered this bill and recommend that the Residency Committee substitute do pass. Signed, Senator Bennett, co-chairman, concurring. Senators Mulcahy, Josephson, and Sackett. Senators Fakes and Vic Fisher signed no recommendation. The Rules Committee considered this bill and recommends that a committee substitute rules be adopted. Signed, Senator Fakes, chairman, concurring. Senators Ray, Bennett, Ferguson. Senator Kelly signed no recommendation. The attached a zero fiscal note and recommended it be returned to Finance. The Finance Committee considered this bill again and recommended that it be replaced with CS Finance and be passed with a new fiscal note. Signed, Senator Bennett, co-chairman, concurring. Senators Mulcahy, Josephson, Ferguson, Vic Fisher, and Sackett. Senator Fakes signed no recommendation. The Rules Committee again considered this bill and recommended it be replaced with the committee substitute second rules. Senator Fakes and calendar, May 18th. Senator Fakes, chairman, and Senators Ray and Ferguson signed calendar and do pass. Senator Kelly signed do not calendar, do not pass. There are four committee substitutes.
Senator Fakes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that the second Rules Committee substitute for Senate Bill 215 be the one that we address, be adopted.
No objection, so ordered. Secretary, read the bill.
CS Consent Bill Number 215 rules. Second rules. An act authorizing the use of Alaska Permanent Fund income to pay longevity bonuses, amending the longevity bonus program and the Permanent Fund dividend distribution program, and providing for an effective date.
Are there amendments?
There is an amendment number one by Senator Halford. This is amendment beginning page 1, line 6, following entitled. It is a one-page amendment.
Are there... I'm probably lacking that amendment myself. May I have a copy of it?
Yes.
Thank you. Are there... Does everybody else have a copy of this amendment? Senator Halford, you may have the floor.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of amendment number one.
Amendment number one has been moved. Objection has been noted. Senator Halford, do you wish to explain it?
Thank you, Mr. President. The amendment deletes all the sections which utilize permanent fund interest to fund the longevity bonus. It also deletes the section 4, which limits longevity bonus payments to a fraction of the permanent fund money set aside. The effect of that section, based on mid-range population estimates in senior citizens, reduces the longevity bonus in FY84 to $215 a month, and further reduces it next year because the fraction of the undistributed portion of the dividend fund will not be there. It's all to be distributed this year. The effect of the bill before us makes some technical amendments to the longevity bonus, which I think are positive, but I think it's a substantial mistake to put our senior citizens in conflict with the rest of the people of Alaska in the question of the permanent fund dividend utilization. I think that mistake can be taken out by this amendment and the rest of the bill go forward, and I would certainly encourage members to support that.
Question. Question is, shall the amendment be adopted? Roll call vote. You may proceed. All members have voted. Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close roll.
The roll shows 8 yeas, 12 nays.
Are there further amendments?
There are no other amendments.
Senator Ray.
I move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for Senate Bill 215 and second rules be considered in gross advance favoring and place in final passage.
Without objection. So ordered. Secretary, read the bill.
CS Consent Bill Number 215, second rules for the Rules Committee, an act authorizing the use of Alaska Permanent Fund income to pay longevity bonuses, amending the longevity bonus program and the Permanent Fund dividend distribution program, and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before you for discussion and debate. Senator Ray.
Mr. President, I believe everybody here is familiar with the Equal Benefits Retirement Program. I have passed out sectional analysis.
It's been before us for some time. Senator Rohde has the floor.
Mr. President, a question through the chair, perhaps to Senator Ray. Does this bill fund retroactively the claims made in the vest suit?
Senator Ray?
No, it does not.
Senator Rohde?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would take exception to that portion of the bill. I was one of the members of the Senate last year that agreed to make my best efforts to retroactively fund a constitutionally created class, and I take that obligation rather seriously. And for that reason, if none other, I cannot support the bill. I don't wish to be overly critical with the bill because I think there is much to commend the bill, and I know there are several individuals in this body who worked very hard on the bill. I wish there had been more public hearings, perhaps teleconferencing, on the bill, and that we'd had more testimony on it. It is the most expensive option that we could have before us, and it will be 4 years before Alaska senior citizens receive the $250 a month that they receive today. I think that's going to be very unpopular in many quarters, and I think it's not a very good way to treat those people in Alaska who contributed a great deal to the state. I think there's also significant doubt about the statistics that would underlie this program or any program that we might craft. That is, how many people would be eligible for benefits? They range from 13,000 to 19,000, depending upon which figures you give the most credibility. Again, Mr. President, I think there's this is one of the problems that we have to address this year, and I suspect we'll have, given the comments of the other body, more opportunity to work on this, and I would like to support the bill, but because of the retroactive clause, I just can't do that.
Senator Ray.
The retroactive clause was in the original bill as presented by the ad hoc committee. Yet in the judgment of some of the legal minds in the administration, it was felt perhaps that that we could continue and would take that to court. Personally, I don't believe that we can win that suit. And as a party to the agreement with the best attorneys, I've done my best, and it's the judgment of the body. Anybody can put that back in as an amendment if they would choose. But I don't think it's the most expensive proposition. I think it's the least expensive, and it certainly will do more to keep the old-timers in Alaska, and those people who are going to benefit from it will be paying it themselves, even the old-timers who are benefiting from it, and those people who do not have retirement systems. In other words, it'll eliminate one of the curses of the present longevity bonus in that people are receiving it that possibly don't need it and do not put any money into it. Under this proposal, everybody will be paying equally for their own retirement.
Senator Joseph.
Mr. President, I support the measure and look at it somewhat differently from the senator from Spinard, because as I understand it, one of the effects of the bill will be to unite Alaskans. It accomplishes one of the purposes that many of us have had, which is to reiterate a constituency for the permanent fund, since everyone will be prospectively a beneficiary upon attaining the necessary age and being in Alaska. So it does not isolate the elderly or the senior citizens from the rest of us, but it brings us together in a program that is equitable. Someone said that it takes everybody's money and gives it to 2% or 2.5% of the people, but actually it gives it to 100% of the people who survived it to the requisite age. Insofar as the argument came up about the $11 million, the senator who asked about that, I'm sure, is aware that there are situations in which courts declare prospectively that certain constitutional rights exist but do not apply retrospectively a remedy for what has happened in the past, just because of the practicalities of a situation. And given the practicalities and affecting state revenues and state expenditures, it seemed appropriate to show our good faith in acting prospectively. Many of us were not part of any commitment with Mr. Vest or his attorneys. And in the worst case, perhaps that issue will have to be addressed. But rather than anticipate that result, we should abide the result if it is addressed in the future.
Senator Rudy?
Mr. President, I don't doubt the sincerity of the two previous speakers. I think we're all trying to to work towards a common goal on this. You, with regard to the retroactive clause, I think you can make a good argument on both sides. It is a close question, and I feel that I made a commitment on that issue, and that the proper thing to do is to fund the retroactive portion of that. I think there's a practical problem in terms of money, and there may be those who don't wish to spend the money, and that's a legitimate concern, certainly. I would hope that, again, that we would have broad public participation in the hearings on this bill, because the issues that we're discussing now really haven't been discussed to the extent that they should, so that those people that are affected by the program and the citizens of Alaska can truly know the changes that we're making. And I hope before we finalize this legislation that we'll have an opportunity to have those broad public hearings.
You have the floor, Senator Helfer.
Thank you, Mr. President. The effect still remains the same, regardless of what the stated goals are. The effect of this bill is to reduce the longevity bonus, reduce permanent fund dividends, reduce funds available for inflation-proofing dividends or essential purposes in future years, and to release general fund dollars for spending this year. That's the real effect. If that's the common goal, it's certainly not my goal. My goal is to see the program survive as best as possible in as close to form as it is right now, without competing with the other programs, without competing with the other people of the state in terms of their permanent fund dividend. I think this program is riding on the back of our senior citizens to give us an excuse to go into the permanent fund again.
Senator Joseph.
That's a wonderful goal, but I don't know how the senator proposes to achieve that except to fund the program under the general fund and make the senior citizens compete with every other interest group that wants operating monies in a budget-tight situation. That would be a lovely goal if we had the funds and we could assure the senior citizens that they would not face a problem in some budget year when a legislature would not give them the priority they deserve.
Senator Ray, were you seeking the floor? Senator Halford.
There is no dedication in this bill. This bill allows for appropriation from permanent fund sources, but there is no dedication in this bill. There's no more security in that funding source than there is in the general fund.
You have the floor, Senator Pettyjohn.
Mr. President, I will vote against this bill. I think we're all aware of why it's before us. It's a result of some sparked by the Zobel decision. And I believe we have an alternative to it, and I'd like to outline that alternative to the other members. The original scheme had the benefits of, number one, a finite number of eligible people, that is, those who've been here 25 years, and therefore there was no incentive for people to come to the state simply to participate in a state, quote, giveaway, unquote. But that's behind us now. The Supreme Court of the United States has addressed this legislature, and it has told us we cannot do that. So given that fact, we have several options. We can go the way this bill goes, either with permanent fund sources or not. But what we're doing with this bill is we're letting everybody who's over 65 and who's been here for a year participate in this program. Now, I think that is objectionable for two reasons at least. It opens up the treasury of this state, whether it's the general fund or the permanent fund, to a virtually limitless drain in the future. And we should be thinking of the long term here in the next 20 years. And it will attract people to this state who will come for no other reason than to take state money from this program. And I think it is objectionable on both those grounds. Another alternative would be to simply kill the program. But that, of course, would have the absolutely objectionable result of taking the seniors in this state, some of them who have been here 25 years or more, who for the last 10 years since this program has been in existence have relied on it, have made decisions based on it with regard to the size of the mortgage payment or whether they take an annuity, life insurance, whatever their retirement plans are, have been based in part on this program. Now, given these two very unattractive alternatives, I think we can make a legitimate argument to the courts under the terms handed down by the Supreme Court in the Zobel decision, which basically called for this legislature to enact laws which rationally further a state purpose. Now, I think avoidance of those two alternatives is a rational state purpose, better than the rational state purposes, the three of them that were argued before the Alaska Supreme Court in the Zobel case. Since those are both so unpalatable and both involve such bad alternatives for the state, I think that we can make an argument that it is legitimate public policy that rationally furthers a legitimate state purpose to avoid those results by grandfathering the rights to the longevity bonus. In other words, those who have received the bonus up till the effective date of the new bill would be entitled to them. There would be simply no one else would be allowed to participate. The rationale being, until you have reached the age of 65, the age of retirement, while you may have expected this and planned for it, the people that are over 65 that have participated in it have actually made decisions. They've actually done things. They've made commitments, maybe irreversible ones, which taking the money away from them would cause them serious problems. I think that's it's not an entirely satisfactory situation. Somebody that's 64. Won't be able to participate. Somebody that's 65 will, and that certainly isn't entirely fair. But given the limited alternatives, given what the courts told us in the Zobel case, I think that's the best we can do. Thank you.
Senator Joseph, you have the floor.
I'm somewhat puzzled, and I have a great deal of respect for my colleague on the Judiciary Committee, but I have not heard that argument before. It is contrary to the advice that special counsel to the ad hoc committee gave. I think it's contrary to the advice from the Department of Law. And what I think the senator is saying is that the court would be told that the public policy exception, if there is such a thing, or rationale for the status quo, is that in order to conform with the principles of the Zobel case as applied to this situation, we would have to do things that we find unattractive. I don't think that creates a public policy exception. I've never heard that a kind of contention, and it seems to me tremendously risky to say that we are just going to stand pat in the face of the advice that the committee received and which the administration has given us through the Department of Law. I think that's a very dangerous proposition. We do have to make a change, and I think the change that we are making under the bill is the best possible change. As the senator says, there are no perfect alternatives here. But I think that you and Senator Ray are to be commended for the leadership you've shown and for trying to fashion a program. It is true that it is not a dedicated fund, but it is a sure thing because it takes to the seniors, because it takes them away from competing in the general fund, and because it gives the permanent fund a strong constituency, which I think is also in the public interest.
You have the floor, sir.
I might respond, Mr. President. I think the argument that I've just enunciated in my earlier address is defensible. I'm not willing to guarantee this body or anybody else it'll prevail in court, but I think it has enough merit that it's worth pursuing. And I think the alternative, I am suggesting a change, of course. I'm suggesting that we don't discriminate among citizens except only to the extent that those who've already received the benefits are going to receive grandfather rights. Grandfather rights, of course, apply in any number of circumstances, in any number of areas of the law. And there's a lot of case law on the subject, and I think a good brief can be written in favor of it. There are parts of it that, as I admit, are not good, but when compared to the bill that we have before the body, a bill that reduces the longevity bonus, a bill that opens up the permanent fund to the first grab from there for a special interest, if you want to call senior citizens a special interest, they have an interest, and they're certainly special, and it reduces the benefits from the permanent fund. Given all those negatives in this approach, I vastly prefer the one I offer.
Senator Ray?
Mr. President, just listening, it seems to me that my colleague has said that, self-admittedly, has said that his proposal is discriminatory, while this proposal is not. It treats everybody equally. And I believe he said that this is the first invasion of the permanent fund. We aren't touching the permanent fund. We're touching the earnings from the permanent fund. All I know is what the legal people tell me and what I can surmise in my own mind. And of all of the options that we have open to us, this seems to be the most palatable, and this seems to be the most fair and the most equal.
You have the floor, Senator Hill.
Thank you, Mr. President. There is another option, and that option would be to create a true annuity chosen at citizens' option, and that annuity to grow over the years that it's chosen to phase in with a wind down of the monthly bonus account. That's the option that was proposed by our former governor, and I think that's not the option we see before us.
Senator Kelly?
Mr. President, I don't believe that this bill we have before us treats everybody equally, as the good senator from Juneau stated. It's quite obvious the immediate effect of this bill, with the failure of Senator Halper's amendment, is that everybody's dividend check they're expecting in the mail this year has already been reduced from about $360 down to $270. Now, you take the $20 that is going to be reduced by the bill we passed last week, allowing the extension of the deadline for filing for the $1,000 check, and we've just reduced every Alaskan man, woman, and child under the age of 65's check this year from about $370 to $250. Now, you're going to have to tell me the equity in that.
Right.
He is in equal benefits retirement. When they become a retirement age, they will be treated equally with the people who have already reached that age.
Question is called for. Question is, shall Senate Bill 215 pass the Senate? You may proceed to it. All members have voted. Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 13 yeas, 7 nays.
Senate Bill 215 is passed the Senate. Senator Ray.
Move the effective date clause, Mr. President.
Question is, shall the effective date clause be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted on the effective date clause? All members have voted?
Senator Bennett.
All members have voted. Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
Senate Bill 215, effective date clause, has passed the Senate. The next item on the daily calendar is Senate Bill 257. Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill number 257 by the Rules Committee, by request of the Special Committee on Legislative Reform, an act relating to standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees in establishing a legislative ethics commission and providing for an effective date. The State Affairs Committee considered this bill and recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute and do pass, signed Senator Vic Fisher, Chairman, concurring Senators Skrzydlewski and Kelly. The Judiciary Committee considered this bill and recommends that it be replaced with the Committee Substitute Judiciary with a new title. Senator Berry, Chairman, signed do pass. Senator Pettyjohn signed do pass. Senator Josephson signed not perfect but do pass. Senator Ziegler signed a total abomination do not pass. Senator Eliason signed no recommendation. There are two committee substitutes.
The floor, Senator. I
move the Judiciary Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Objection is noted. You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I agree with some of the comments from some of the people on the Judiciary Committee. This bill, as I look at it, in a spot or two, is even unconstitutional. On the first page of it, it mentions this chapter applies to a member of the legislature, to a person employed by a member of a legislature. And that means that the guy that's out there clearing my field, he's going to be held to the same rules that this cotton-picking thing here brings up. That's just one of the things I'm looking at, Mr. President. I look at another deal over here that says a conflict of interest. We just voted on a bill that I have one hell of a conflict of interest, you might say, and that has to do with the senior citizens bonus. It says here on page 2, for example, a person to whom this chapter applies may not use public office for private advancement or gain. That's certainly going to be a gain for me in the future. It says that a conflict of interest exists when a person to whom this chapter applies takes or withholds official action and exerts influence that could substantially benefit. Sure, that's going to benefit me. I've just had a conflict of interest, Mr. President, on that one item. Another item in here on page 3, section G, line 24, it says it's a conflict of interest for a member of the legislature who does not represent the city and borough of Juneau to accept money from an event held within the city or borough of Juneau during a session. Well, what are we going to do? Is Anchorage going to come up with an amendment to do the same thing in Anchorage and Fairbanks, perhaps, and Kotzebue out there, perhaps? I think that's unconstitutional, Mr. President. It has something other to do about loans here. On page 5, line 3, each February the 1st, each loan agency shall publish a listing of all outstanding loans to persons to whom this chapter applies, except for loans described in A of this section. Well, I don't know what the hell A is either, because none of this makes any sense. Let me backtrack on that. Well, I'm still sore about it anyway. But the loans, Mr. President, how many banks publishes your loans that you have out to the public? I don't think the banks would do it. Maybe we should eliminate all loan programs. State agencies that have authority to grant loans shall adopt regulations and establish separate procedures for granting and reviewing loans to a person whom this chapter applies. Aren't they selecting us and separating us? We're uncommon characters now, are we not, sir? I think that perhaps some of this information that we've got in here and they're talking to in this particular amendment and all the rest of them, I think, as I said, they're unconstitutional. I don't think this bill goes far enough. I wouldn't be so unhappy, Mr. President, with it if we included other branches of the government in it. There's just as many bad apples there as there are here. We took care of our bad apples ourselves. We had a lot of publicity and all that, but we got a lot of other characters, and I shall continue to vote against this bill until we include the other characters in the same type of conflict of interest. Thank you, sir.
Senator Ziegler.
When you make a mistake, you should perhaps admit it. And I was chastised, and properly so, by the chairman of the Senate Rules Committee for the way I signed the committee report on this particular piece of legislation, a total abomination. And so I'm prepared to make an apology at this time. Considering the subject matter and presupposing that legislation of this kind is necessary, which I dispute, this is probably the best possible work product you can ever get, but the concept is abominable. and so I apologize for referring to your work product as a total abomination, but the concept which underlies it is a total abomination.
Mr. President?
Thank you, Senator Ziegler. You have the floor, Senator.
I accept the apology from the gentleman from Ketchikan. It was I that mentioned it to him as his committee chairman. If I could just have a little leeway.
We've allowed full leeway. It's debate over a major amendment, which is the whole bill. I think it opens the whole bill.
Personally, Mr. President, this is not a silk purse, nor is it a sow's ear. It's something in between. And I don't have any particular pride in sponsorship or authorship or anything else. But just my job as a judiciary chairman to try to put this into some kind of a focus, at least to bring out some of the other, perhaps a different perspective than was given in some of the other committees. Personally, I think I could live with the present law just the way it is. I don't have any state contracts. I don't have any state leases. I don't have any connection. I don't have a loan. I wish I did, but I don't have any. I don't have any live-in. So it don't bother me on that score. So I really don't care about this thing, other than the fact that some people feel that they have to be self-masochistic and get a braided whip and whip themselves every time somebody points a finger at them and calls them to task for something that they have no responsibility for. I would just like to say that I am open and will be persuaded by any of the debate put forward on the floor, because I've already made up my mind how I'm going to vote.
Senator Sackett, please just a moment. We'll be at ease.
Mr. President, I don't know whether one bad apple is any worse than the other. Perhaps the Judiciary Committee amendment is better than the bad apple we started with in the first place. I withdraw my objection.
Without objection, the committee substitute has been adopted. Secretary, read the bill.
CS for Senate Bill Number 257, Judiciary, an act relating to standards of conduct of legislators and legislative employees and establishing a select committee on legislative ethics and providing for an effective date.
Senator Gilman will be back in a moment. Is there an amendment? We will await a debate on the amendment until you return.
Committee on, insert commission.
Senator Joseph, if you wish to move the amendment, please do so. Then we will await Senator Gilman's.
President, I move the amendment.
Without objection, we'll wait for a moment and at ease. We will stand at ease for a moment longer. Senator Joseph, the amendment you proposed and moved is before us. Do you wish to speak to that amendment?
I think so, Mr. President.
You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, the Judiciary Committee, I think, did an excellent job in its work on this bill. I was privileged to serve for a time as a relief pitcher on the Joint Committee, and the conclusion that we reached was that the group which should administer this program should be a commission which would include public members. And Amendment Number 1 is designed to bring that issue to the Senate for a Senate determination by the full body. Mr. President, I know this is a difficult proposition for us, because we have never approached our ethical issues in this way before, as to the legislature. But I would remind the Senate that when we deal with many of the occupations, professions, activities around the state, the legislature has decided that some public membership in the governing bodies that affect those activities should be provided for. For example, we have, over the objections of doctors, put provisions in for public members on the medical board. We've done it in other professions, the Bar Association, other professions. We have recognized the importance of public input. Mr. President, as far as I'm concerned, the members of this legislature, and we have very vigorous disagreements, and we have witnessed, even in this session, some things occurring which are baffling or puzzling both to us and the public, but I believe that the members of this legislature are honorable men and women. I believe that one of the purposes of the bill before us, and there are several purposes, and I want to comment on them, but one of the purposes is the installation of public confidence to the level that it should be held at, not only for our benefit as incumbent legislators, but so that other good and honorable and public-spirited men and women will be encouraged to aspire to legislative office. I think that would be in the public interest. We also want to achieve clarity and resolve the problems posed by the former Attorney General in his opinion of December 3rd, 1982. And with that in mind, it seems to me that Amendment 1 should be adopted. I respectfully submit that the public will have a difficult time accepting legislation in which the legislature says that when its conduct comes under scrutiny, it will be the legislators alone who will deal with the problem internally. That is not the same rule we apply to the medical board and the bar association and other professions and other occupations. We are making ourselves, in a sense, an exception, and I don't think that that's a reasonable exception to offer. Now, there is a parade of horrors. There is the potential, I understand, that some person with a kind of vigilante complex, publicity-seeking motivation or other malicious motivation could be serving as a public member, the critics of this amendment will say, and will injure without warrant the reputation of a member of the Senate or House. But, Mr. President, I think that is an extremely remote possibility because the amendment requires that the public members be confirmed by two-thirds of the legislature, of the body, either the president of the Senate appointing or the speaker appointing, as the case may be. I don't think that that problem is realistic. It is just as realistic to believe that there could be the same kind of evil intent or motivation as to other members of the committee or commission if they are not citizens at large. But I think risk for risk, I am willing to run that risk in order to get the public involved. This is the public's legislature. Let the public feel that there is a participation here and there's a window that they can look through. Put the same ground rules in effect in the legislature that we have put on the boards and commissions. I think it is an important policy question. I think it will strengthen the bill. And I think that we may learn from the public member who may have different perceptions about what is right and wrong than some of us who are so close to the problem. Sometimes we may not see the forest for the trees. I think that attitude, that aspect of being a civilian looking at the legislature will be constructive and wholesome. I think it also relieves a little bit of the pressures that will be on the members of the panel if it is only a legislative panel, Mr. President. Tremendous pressures about the judgment of a colleague. I would not want to volunteer for that role and sit in judgment of a colleague. I think that it will be better to have some public involvement in that process. And I think the amendment is a good one, and I hope that the amendment, which, as I say, reflects the majority view in the joint committee, I hope that amendment will be adopted.
We have the floor, Senator Fahrenkamp, then Senator Moss.
Mr. President, a question to the maker of the amendment, if I may, through the chair. What is the fiscal note on amendment of this type? It seems to me that we're setting up another board and commission, and there must be a fiscal note that goes with it.
The response?
Well, Mr. President, I don't
you have the floor.
Fiscal notes for amendments. Perhaps the chairperson of the Senate Rules Committee could address that because that issue, I know, came up in the joint committee. We think that it has minimal impact on you.
Rules Chairperson, do you wish to address this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, through the bearer of the question, there was a fiscal note prepared for the original bill, the Legislative Affairs, Legislative Special Committee and Legislative Reforms Committee, and it was between $100,000 and $150,000. It's a guesstimate. There was no salary due anyone. It was just a per diem basis. Those legislators serving would not receive the per diem if they were on at session when it met.
Yes, for Senator Moss.
Mr. President, I might make one brief comment that I understand what Senator Joseph is trying to do, but I might also point out there is a court of last resort that occurs every 2 years in what's known as the general elections.
Yes, for Senator Fisher.
Yes, Mr. President, through the chair.
Just a quick perusal. I have some questions that the maker may want to clarify. On page 2, paragraph 3, the maker refers to residents. Are we talking a one-year resident, two-year, or what? I think that needs to be clarified. Number 5, what happens if we cannot find a former legislator who's willing to assume that responsibility? How would that seat be filled? And the last point that I need to have clarified is on page 3, paragraph F, holders seek elective office. I think the maker probably means state office and not chambers of commerce or local borough officials, school district officials, or whatever. But those are three questions I have, Mr. President.
Senator Joseph.
Mr. President, we didn't put a one-year requirement on the residency provision because I think the political process will take care of that. I have a great doubt that the President of the Senate would appoint someone to the commission who has not been in Alaska a year, or that two-thirds of the Senate would care to appoint that person, unless perhaps it was Archibald Cox or someone like that. As far as the elective office is concerned, as I look at that language, the local official could not serve on the commission. But if it's the will of the Senate to permit that, I would have no severe objection. But the idea here is to have a true member of the public who does not hold public office, but who looks at this from the perspective of the voter and not the incumbent at any level, bring that perspective to the body. Thirdly, as to what would happen if no legislator would serve, we have not addressed that. But I think that that you will find former legislators who will recognize that this is a difficult task, a public service, and who would be willing to serve. I cannot believe that there is not one such person in the state. We do that because that person can make a very special contribution. That person would have had the benefit of being in the legislature, but not being of it anymore. Of being a voter, but one who understands the problems and pressures, the issues that come, the ethical questions that come before lawmakers.
Senator Ziegler.
Mr. President, I think this is a perfectly wonderful amendment, and I hope we all get behind it and support it to a man and to our two women senators. I like all the other amendments, too, and I think we ought to go for them.
Senator Farenkamp.
Mr. President, this amendment bothers me. In the first place, it says to me that we are putting this commission in a position that in any time where their problem arises, as came up for me this year, that they have to call a hurried meeting and find out whether or not there is a conflict of interest. Now, this means to me, I don't know how you could do it with $100,000 or $150,000 fiscal note, when each time you have to go to that commission to find out whether or not you have a problem, they're going to have to call a meeting. So what are they going to have, a meeting every other day? If Congress can have their code of ethics and that be handled by Congress, I don't know why we're not mature enough to handle it ourselves.
Senator Gilman has been seeking the floor for some time.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the purpose of clarifying this amendment, on the first page of the amendment, there is it says page 8, line 1 through page 9, line 4, delete all material and insert. But on page line 9-5, it looks like a sentence that's kind of going to be standing out there by itself, unless the maker of the amendment felt that it should go on page 4 of the amendment and be renumbered to 5. And that's to the authority or duties of the commission or the committee, whichever document you're reading. But I suspect it's intended to stay in there so that it ties in with 2460-150. If that is the case, then we probably would need some additional language in this amendment in order to accomplish that.
Senator Joseph.
Mr. President, it would be the intent that the commission would have the authority to issue advisory opinions under 2460-150, and I'm a little bit confused as to why...
The Senate will stand at ease, and Senator Josephson, Senator Gilman, would you research...
Yes, Mr. President. For information for the members of the body, Senator Josephson's amendment is the mechanism inside the committee substitute, State Affairs. So if you will turn in your packet to the State Affairs Committee substitute, starting on page 9, that's the mechanism that Senator Josephson has got before us for an amendment. There's no difference between the Judiciary Committee substitute and the State Affairs Committee substitute except for this mechanism. And Senator Josephson is offering this amendment so that the body can address the mechanism. For historical background only, I would offer the body the following information. So you know that we're not alone out there at this abomination. 38 states have enacted some kind of ethics committee, ethics commission, conflict of interest committee, something, 38 states. 28 of those states have got an external commission, either within their legislative branch or a commission that is for everybody, all three branches. So 28 of those states cover all three branches. Eight out of the 38 have internal mechanisms, like Senator Fahrenkamp said, like Congress does, and they work very, very similarly, and that's the mechanism that Senator Ray has offered in the Judiciary Committee substitute. So the amendment before you, all of the mechanics of that amendment are in the State Affairs Committee substitute, starting on page 9.
Senator Gilman has the floor.
I appreciate the explanation, but I think when I was out of the room, you adopted the Judiciary Committee substitute, right? And so we are now amending the Judiciary Committee substitute to make it what, the State Affairs Committee substitute?
Senator Joseph, you do have the floor.
There are some differences between the State Affairs version and the Judiciary version. What I think that... The rules chair was stating was that this mechanism is both in the State Affairs version and in the Joint Committee version, as well as in the version of many states that have done.
Senator from Kenai, I apologize. The Judiciary Committee made some excellent technical amendments, some very good ones, and they made some substantive amendments, too, so I was in error. There are changes in the rest of the body, but not a lot. But the mechanism, Senator Josephson's mechanism, is in total in the State Affairs Committee substitute.
You have the Senator Gilman.
Then I go back to the question that I had about the amendment that's before us. The State Affairs rendition of this thing does not have a power or duty of the commission to issue advisory opinions. And that goes back to the question that I asked a few minutes ago. Was it the intent? And the maker of the amendment has indicated it was the intent to have that as a duty of the commission.
And the floor, Senator.
The commission, as provided in the State Affairs Bill, did have the power, or would have had the power, to render advisory commissions in Section 2460-170 on page 11 of that bill. However, it was not set out in the duty section, Section 160 of the State Affairs Bill, but the powers are there. If my amendment is adopted and the senator wishes to place renumbering on the advisory opinion language which we retain under duties, I have no objection to that. If my amendment is adopted as I see it, the advisory opinion power is expressed in the duty section. It also has a separate section of its own.
To the adoption of the Josephson Amendment, Senator Kelly has the floor.
Yes, Mr. President, I served on the legislative committee that came up with the original bill, the State Affairs Committee, and I closely watched the Judiciary Committee, and I can support public members on this ethics committee. But it's my judgment that the best chance of getting this bill through the legislature is to go along with the language developed by the Judiciary Committee, which abides by the Constitution of the State of Alaska which says that each House should judge the qualifications of its own members. So I'm going to oppose the amendment, and I believe, Mr. President, that the public, as Senator Moss said, does have recourse in legislative conflict of interest and legislative ethics at the polls, and I believe that the public interest is protected in that manner, as far as this particular commission is concerned.
Joseph?
Mr. President, just to sum up, first, as the rules chair has advised the body, many states provide for public members, and we've done that in other agencies, as I've said. Secondly, there is no constitutional problem, according to the testimony we heard, because the actual imposition of any sanctions is by the legislative body itself. In this sense, the commission is rendering only advice. I hope that the amendment will be adopted. I do not think it's a legal problem. I have no information that this would make the bill more difficult to enactment. Perhaps the reverse would be true. And I think that the public should have some participation.
Question. Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think unless the public has some involvement, the bill is probably meaningless. It may be meaningless anyway, but unless the public has some involvement, it's surely meaningless.
My Senator Kelly has the floor.
Mr. President, that's absolutely untrue. The statement made by the good Senator from Chugiak that the bill is meaningless without four members of the public sitting on the commission. Mr. President, we are raising the standard of conduct for legislators. You go through this bill and you can see it. This is something we haven't had in the past. This is something brand new. We are raising the standards of conduct, and if it's not 100% and if it's not perfect, then accept what you can get to start out with and amend it next year to upgrade it if you so prefer. But we are going to have something now that we didn't have before with the passage of this bill, and it is the best interest of the public.
Rules chairperson, then Senator Halford.
Mr. President, we have a super brief at ease.
Yes, we'll be at ease.
Not to confuse the issue any further, but I also have an amendment to the amendment, and where does that exactly fit in? I see there's one being printed, and I don't know if mine was number one or number two or number three, or where are we?
You ask the Secretary of the Senate. Of course, we have to move these amendments. And right now, we're debating the principal amendment, and I would like to keep it in order so we can debate the principal amendment pretty much to its end, and then proceed with the amendments to amendments. Is there further debate on the amendment at this time? Secretary, there's an
wait now.
In order. Secretary will then
read amendment to the amendment number one. What is the amendment to amendment number one as it came in order to the Secretary of the Senate?
Amendment to amendment number one by Senator Eliason. Add.
Now, is there a copy on everybody's desk?
There is not. It's
how long is the amendment?
It's very simple. If you like it read. It's a definition.
Well, I'll provide for it once to be read. If there's any objection, we will await its being printed. The Secretary very carefully identified this amendment.
By Senator Eliason to Committee Substitute Senate Bill 257, Judiciary, Amendment to Amendment Number 1, add. I believe he means at the bottom of page 4 to the Amendment Number 1. In AS 3950-10-3950-200, quote, state commission and bond means, quote, 46 Legislative Ethics Commission.
Please re-identify. I don't see it at the bottom of my page 4. It's on page 4 of the original proposed amendment.
I believe it would go there, wouldn't it, Senator Eliason, at the bottom of page 4?
It's a part of the amendment number 1 by Senator Josephson. If I may, I just might explain what it does.
The motion has been for adoption of the amendment. The amendment.
I move the amendment to the amendment.
The location of this amendment is confusing. You will let you explain the location.
Mr. President, the purpose of the amendment is to there's a big difference between the commission that the Judiciary Committee set up and what Senator Joseph proposes, and that is in as much as the committee established by the Judiciary Committee, the members of that committee all report financial business disclosures. However, by expanding that committee, we in a sense are there are 45. Different boards and commissions in the state of Alaska now who have to file financial disclosures. Now, it seems to me that if we're going to create an ethics committee, they certainly should also do that.
That's a big difference between our committee and a new one proposed by Senator Josephson.
Is the Secretary of the Senate satisfied as the location of this amendment? This is confusion, I know, because of the long amendment that really doesn't have easily identifiable locations. Senator Joseph?
Mr. President, I think the amendment's an excellent one. I think that those who sit in judgment should be held to the same standards as those who judge. I welcome the amendment.
Is there objection to the amendment? The amendment? Understood? There's objection.
Mr. President, I might be somewhat slow. I don't understand the amendment. Could we have it explained again, please?
Yes. I'd like to have this resolved if possible, Senator Eliason, please.
Mr. President, Senator Kelly recalls that Section 395020 requires the filing of a financial and business report. If you are a member of this body, as you well know, you have to file this disclosure. It also requires that 45 other boards and commissions also disclose their financial interests. Now, in effect, we're creating an ethics commission to look into our ethics. It seems to me only reasonable that they also establish their financial interests in business conflicts.
Senator Moss has been speaking of the floor. Senator Moss, do you have this particular amendment?
I would like to have a brief at ease, Mr. President.
All right, we'll be at ease.
You have the floor, Senator Moss. You're rising on the amendment. The amendment?
Maybe out of order, but I would like for you to consider the fact that we should carry this bill over perhaps till tomorrow. I know we got a lot of other committee meetings and things today. Maybe we seem to be doing committee work on the floor. Perhaps we can do a better job tomorrow.
Thank you, Senator Moss. Senator, you rise on the amendment. The amendment, Senator?
No, you're not, Mr. President. If we're considering adjournment, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration on SB 215 at this time before we go into adjournment. I invite everyone to read the April 25th letter of John Tillinghast, which has been distributed.
The amendment. The question is, shall the amendment on the amendment be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? The amendment has been adopted.
There is another amendment to amendment number one by Senator Ray. And this has been distributed, beginning C, delete and substitute on page 2 of the amendment.
We will allow for the amendment. Senator Ray?
Move the amendment, Mr. President. All this does is just to diversify the membership so that there aren't 4 members from Juneau. Or possibly Anchorage. And I don't think any of us should be controlled by the mentality of either Anchorage or Juneau. So I would just like to diversify and taking a page out of my good friend from Anchorage here, he'd like to have as broad a representation you can get, so this provides that you don't have 4 people from one borough.
Mr. President.
You have floor, Senator Joseph.
Senator from Juneau, take something out of me, but it's not a page. I have no strong feelings about this. The only thing I'm concerned about is that it will have the effect of limiting the field of eligible people whom the body can select for service.
Unanimous consent for this amendment was asked by Senator Rohde. Is there objection? Objection. Senator Halford, you wish the floor?
Thank you, Mr. President. I think it does substantially limit the field of people. If you're talking about half of the population and you're looking for, 7 members, I think it substantially limits the field of qualified people.
Senator Ray?
Does the gentleman infer that the people in Anchorage are more ethical than the ones in the rest of the state?
I obviously cannot infer that. I simply point out that half the population lives there.
Senator Ray?
I imagine you could find 4 people out of 400,000 in the rest of the state.
The question is, as the amendment to the amendment, you may proceed to vote. Have all members voted for the amendment to the amendment? Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 15 yeas, 5 nays.
Amendment to the amendment has been adopted. Are there further amendments to the amendment?
There are no other amendments to amendment number 1.
The amendment is before you. Call for the question. Senator Kelly has the floor.
Mr. President, I would only like to point out that in case this amendment is defeated, and I certainly hope that it is for the good of the bill passing the legislature this year, because I believe it's important that we do pass a conflict of interest legislation. I just want to point out that in the case that the amendment is defeated, that we can always go back and attach Senator Eliason's amendment to the judiciary version of the bill. So we wouldn't lose Senator Eliason's amendment in any case.
Is there any
isn't any... Senator Helfrich, please address
me. Excuse me. Of course, there isn't any reason for the amendment then, because everybody on it's under disclosure anyway.
Now, the amendment, with the amendments to the amendment that have been adopted, is before you. The question is, shall the amendment be adopted? Amendment 1 by Senator Joseph. You may proceed to vote. Any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 8 yeas, 12 nays.
The amendment number 1 has been defeated. Are there further amendments?
There is amendment number 2 by Senator Fahrenkamp. Page 3, line 24 through 29, delete.
Do we have a copy of it?
Yes, there is.
Page 2. Senator Senator, we'll be at ease. Senator Fahrenkamp, you have the floor. Did you move the amendment?
Mr. President, I move the amendment. Ask unanimous consent.
Okay. Objection by Senator Eliason. Senator Fahrenkamp has moved.
Mr. President, we have a rule here on special legislation. If I ever saw special legislation, that's what this is. As far as I'm concerned, we're working on an ethics bill, not a protect the lobbyist bill.
Senator Eliason was seeking the floor in this, Senator Ray. Senator Ray.
Mr. President, I'd just like to make it clear to the body that this is not my amendment, or the Section G was not supported by me in the Judiciary Committee, nor was it prompted by me. And although I do have mixed opinions on it, I believe that I would support the Fahrenkamp Amendment.
Senator Lassie?
Mr. President, I guess I'm the guilty one. Maybe this isn't the proper wording to address the issue that I brought before the Judiciary Committee. That was, in it's become quite popular in the last few years to hold fundraising events in the capital city. That's when when we're in session, the legislature has many important bills before different committees of the legislature. And it seems that whether it's a conflict or not, the perception is that when we, or those who choose to have fundraisers, send out invitations to lobbyists, whether or not they have bills pending in the committees or not, is not all that, doesn't make all that much difference. But it's the perception that the general public has of us over here in legislative session holding fundraisers for the next election. It seems to me we're here in Juneau to get on with the business of legislature and get out of here, not to have fundraisers to perpetuate our terms in office, especially if you send invitations to those who are lobbying your support on bills in your committee. It seems like it's a direct conflict of interest. Now, how we address that issue, I'm not quite sure. But I think that there is a conflict when we solicited their participation in our fundraisers with tickets saying, show up, we're having a party, it's $100 to come in, when they have bills pending before our different committees. And I think there's a conflict, and I think this is one way of addressing that.
Senator Fahrenkamp, then Senator Helfrich.
Mr. President, in my opinion, that's already been addressed. You cannot solicit gifts.
Senator Helfrich.
Well, it seems like there's two ways to address what the amendment seems to want to do. We could also simply delete who does not represent the city and borough of Juneau, and then the prohibition would apply evenly to all members holding fundraising in the city during the session. I think that would be a far better way to do it than simply delete the entire prohibition.
Senator Ray.
Then you have the proposition that the people from Anchorage can go home to Anchorage and do it, but the people who live here within this community cannot hold a fundraiser. Not that I'm going to, but I mean, that's it.
The question is the Fahrenkamp Amendment. You have the floor, State Affairs Chairman.
Mr. President, I'd like to address a question, if I may, through the chair to Senator Eliason, as to the intent of this section, particularly the last two lines, where the last three lines, if a substantial purpose of the event is to raise money on behalf of the member for a state legislative campaign purposes or for other state legislative political purposes. Now, I can see, I fully agree with him that we should not have fundraisers when free conference is meeting or when some bill is up before my committee or something for me. But I'm a little bit concerned if it says, or for other state legislative political purposes, because it may be that the Republican Party or the Democratic Party may be hosting some kind of a function, a broad function,
that's not specifically directed toward that member, which doesn't mean a lobbyist in particular would be trying to influence a particular member. And then subsequently, a year later, the party may be giving money to a particular member, and there may have been a mixing of money and so on, and I think this may cause a problem there. I would suggest that if we were to act on this, that the line 29 deleted and be deleted, and the last two words in line 28.
Are you proposing an amendment to an amendment to an amendment?
May I? I so do, Miss President, ask unanimous consent.
I object.
You have the floor, Senator.
Clarify it if I can. This is not my language. My
You're
original
speaking
proposal.
Speaking to the amendment by Fahrenkamp at this time.
I'm speaking to the question posed to me by Senator Fisher.
Senator Fisher has nothing formally before us.
I'm speaking to Senator Fahrenkamp's amendment.
You have the floor.
Which deals with Senator Fisher's question, which I'm going to try to answer. This is not my language.
You have the floor.
My original proposal in Judiciary Committee was to ban all fundraising in the capital city during the session. And then it's a compromise with those who brought up the proposition that maybe a statewide candidate might want to hold. Well, why shouldn't he? So this is the compromise language. I'm not happy with it. I think it addresses part of the problem, but I think a total ban on having legislative fundraisers during a session in the Capitol. I think that's my objective. If this only solves half the problem, it's certainly better than having the whole problem before us.
Senator Ray has been seeking the floor.
Mr. President, we apparently have hit a snag here, and the hour is past noon. Perhaps I would move and ask unanimous consent that we hold Senate Bill 257 over till tomorrow's calendar with all amendments.
Sergeant of Arms, with that motion, would you be certain that all amendments are typed up well and any other amendments proposed are well typed up and distributed? As a matter of fact, the Xerox on these amendments I can't read. Senator Halford, you speak to the holding over of the bill in second reading for one day.
Just briefly for a point, Mr. President, I'd like to thank you and the leadership of this body for bringing this bill to the floor in an open setting. I think this is the kind of bill that you don't get an answer to unless you address somewhat as a committee of the whole. And I think although it's cumbersome to do it that way, the information process for all the members is probably to our benefit, and I think we get a better product than we've done.
Without objection, the bill is held over. I, too, appreciate the quality of the debate and the decorum today. We're down to unfinished business. Are there citations this morning? Secretary, read the citations.
Citations honoring Tim Mitchell by Representatives Flood, Duncan, and N.M. Miller, and Senator Ray. Honoring Bruce Lula by Representatives Flood, Duncan, M.M. Miller, and Senator Ray. Honoring Harvey Knuth by Representative Flood, Duncan, and M.M. Miller, and Senator Ray. Honoring Sheila Evans by Representative Hurlburt.
Senator Ray.
Mr. President.
You have the floor, Senator Ray.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the publication notice requirement on the citation honoring Doris Brewer be waived and the citation be taken up in special order of business at this time.
Without objection, so ordered. Exactly enough. You have the floor, Senator. Secretary, please read it.
Citation honoring Doris Brewer by Senators Gilman, Paul Fisher, and Representatives Malone and Fritz.
You have the floor, Senator Ray.
Additions or corrections, I would move the citation calendar be adopted as read.
Objection, so ordered. Citation calendar is adopted. Is there unfinished business this morning? Announcement of committee meetings, Finance 130. Resources.
Mr. Chairman, the Resources Committee today will be having the briefing on the Canadian Arctic Mine Tour. Reminder, 3 o'clock in the belts. We'll also take up Senate Bill 289 and continuation of Senate Bill 279.
Thank you. Items under special orders. Senator Ray, this morning.
Other business come before the Senate. I move we adjourn until 10 a.m.
Senator Kelly, did you wish the floor?
I would move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused on Friday and Saturday if necessary.
Without objection. We do not tend to have a Saturday session. We're waiting for the budget to come over. This will probably be the last weekend off. You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call of the Senate on 520 and 523.
Without objection, Senator Moss, are you seeking the floor? Senator Ray, Adjournment motion.
Move we adjourn to 10 a.m. Thursday, May 19th.
We're adjourned.